This is the State of Things from the American Tobacco Historic District. I'm Frank Stachow. Lawmakers returned to Capitol Hill last week for a short session before the November election. Their two main priorities are passing a government spending bill and securing funding to fight the Zika virus. And the pressure's on to push through partisan deadlock and wrap up the session quickly so incumbents facing tough races like Senator Richard Burr have time to campaign in their home states. All of this is happening against a backdrop of continued political tension around North Carolina's House Bill 2. Jeff Bennett is senior Washington reporter for Time Warner Cable News, and he joins me now to talk about the latest. Welcome back, Jeff.
Thanks for having me back.
And Congress is back. They got back last week. Short timeline. Tell us about some of the big priorities.
Well, you know, in an election year, Congress really only has one job to do, and that's keeping the government running. And this year is no exception. And here we are again coming down to the wire. And initially, the debate was over terms. Democrats wanted a short-term funding bill that would keep the government running only through Christmas. Republicans wanted to extend the funding as much as possible because they are anticipating some losses in November, and they wanted to lock in a deal under more favorable conditions. So now as it stands, now that they've essentially agreed to do a shorter funding measure, we expect that to be wrapped up, if not by the end of this week, by early next week. Now, there are a few things complicating that effort, which is, as you mentioned, how to fund the fight to stop the mosquito-borne Zika virus. And the issue there is whether to allow Planned Parenthood-affiliated clinics to have access to Zika response money. That's being worked out in the Senate deal. But the motivating factor behind all of this, for Republicans anyway, as you mentioned, is the election. And the Senate Majority Leader Mitch McConnell wants to adjourn as quickly as possible, whereas Democrats really want to keep the process going and keep the lawmakers, the incumbent lawmakers here in Washington.
Yeah, and that might explain why, you know, in the recent past, there was high drama around these stopgap funding measures and questions about whether or not there would be another government shutdown. But I guess that's not at all on the table this time.
That's right. And particularly because an election is just weeks away, and neither side wants to be seen as being responsible for a government shutdown. And Republicans are defending 24 seats in the fight to control the Senate compared to Democrats who are defending just 10 seats. So again, you know, GOP incumbents like Richard Burr are here stuck on Capitol Hill while their Democratic challengers are campaigning, back at home.
Right. And Richard Burr finds himself in an unexpectedly tight race with Deborah Ross.
He does. And, you know, he has a low-key sort of laid-back style that is frustrating a lot of his supporters. And Burr has insisted that he will officially become a candidate when the U.S. Senate adjourns for the election. Now, right now, that's October 7th. We expect the Senate to adjourn well before that because, you know, as we said, they will then get back home and campaign. But his point is that he doesn't want there to be any question between the separation of his Senate business and his campaigning. And of course, you know, this is it's a tight election. The Real Clear Politics average has him up 3 points. So it's a close race. It's his to lose. And again, his supporters really want to see him do more campaigning.
Yeah, and it's interesting because nobody anticipated it, not even the Democratic Party, who had a hard time several months ago finding anybody to run against him. He seemed like such a lock, and now he's pretty much in a dead heat with Deborah Ross.
You have to imagine what Kay Hagan is thinking about all of this, because you remember Democrats were waiting on her to make up her mind about whether or not she would seek that seat. She said no, and then there was a lot of hemming and hawing about, well, who are we going to find? They eventually settled on Deborah Ross. But I do wonder if she's rethinking that decision to not run for that seat.
Well, Kay Hagan finding herself in the same situation several years ago when nobody wanted to run against Elizabeth Dole because she had a lock, and sure enough, Kay Hagan took it by default and ended up beating the candidate who nobody thought could lose, Elizabeth Dole, in that election. So here we are again. Well, so the Democratic – let's talk about the possibility of getting out early. I understand the Senate could be out as early as tomorrow. Now, you talked about the tension here, but what's the likelihood that tomorrow's the last day?
They could be. We do expect the Senate to vote first, to vote first and leave town, and that would leave the House to wrap things up and essentially just consider the Senate deal, the Senate version of this funding bill. And so we expect the House to stay in Washington through next week. But yeah, the sort of the writing on the wall now is that the Senate will adjourn by the end of the week.
All right, let's talk about these reelection campaigns and the overall election campaign, the presidential race. The Democratic infrastructure in the state of North Carolina seems to be a little more robust than that of the Republican infrastructure. Tell us about that and kind of why we got here and if that'll make a difference.
Well, the one thing we learned from now President Obama's campaign is that ground game accounts for a lot. And Donald Trump's campaign is just now unveiling its first offices in North Carolina. Compare that to Hillary Clinton, who has dozens of campaign offices, more than 30, across the state. And so there's that. There's also the fact that Donald Trump is not really spending a lot of money on TV ads. I think he has maybe one or two ads running. And that has prompted a Republican super PAC with ties to Mitch McConnell to reserve more than $8 million to buy ads in North Carolina to prop up the down-ballot races, including Richard Burr. And then there's a nonprofit arm of the Senate Leadership Fund, which is called One Nation. They're spending another $1 million. And it's because there's this fear that the sort of absence of Donald Trump, and I don't mean his physical absence because he is in the state a lot, but the absence on the airwaves and people knocking on doors, that sort of thing, will demoralize voters and affect turnout. Now, the Trump campaign believes that it's more important and more effective just to have Donald Trump and his daughter-in-law and his children in the state and doing these big rallies and things like that. So that accounts for the difference that you're seeing. But Democrats and even some Republicans privately tell me that there really is no way around really developing an infrastructure to call voters, knock on doors, put up signs, that sort of thing, spend money on TV ads. So that's how we're seeing that play out
now. In the presidential race, certainly. That said, at the moment, Hillary Clinton and Donald Trump are neck and neck in the polls, but, you know, there's still 8 weeks to go. Let's talk about this Senate race again and the other down-ballot races, because they're happening against the backdrop of continuing fallout and suffering to the state of North Carolina because of House Bill 2. ACC is the latest to pull out, NCAA, NBA before that, and countless businesses. What about Richard Burr? I mean, this is not national legislation. It was passed at the state level. Does he have to talk about this, and has he said much about it?
He has talked about it reluctantly. You know, politicians do not like to get too far ahead of their supporters on any given issue. So he has evolved on this since the law first passed in March. Initially, he told the ABC affiliate there that he doesn't think the bill discriminates. More recently than that, he said that the General Assembly should roll back the bathroom-related provision in HB2. And he also pointed a finger at Charlotte for passing the LGBT non-discrimination ordinance that was invalidated by HB2. So I will tell you that Richard Burr and even in Tom Tillis, for that matter, do not like to spend a lot of time talking about HB2. They just don't think it's an issue that really matters that much, and frankly, that really moves the needle for them politically in any given way. But the ACC action, I think, is significant. Because, you know, four of the conference's 15 members are in North Carolina, and the conference itself is headquartered in Greensboro.
Right.
So well, as this mounts up, Will.
Sure, and NCAA effect on Greensboro. And interestingly enough, Cary, which is that purplest of all suburbs in North Carolina, and Wake County, one of the key counties in the state if you're going to carry the state, really hurt seriously by the NCAA pullout because of the other championship games that have been pulled out. So it might be an interesting thing to watch.
Yeah, and it shows how sports are, again, a battleground for social issues. I'm thinking, too, of Colin Kaepernick in San Francisco. Yep. With his protest. And I think this really tests the limits to which Republicans will go in supporting this law as the losses mount up.
Well, let's take a turn here and talk about some other interesting news, very interesting news in Washington, D.C., the new National Museum of African American History and Culture. You had a look yesterday, set to open at the end of the month. Tell us more.
I didn't quite know what to expect because I drive by it every day on the way into work. And it's this vast bronze facade sitting on the National Mall next to the Washington Monument in a sea of white marble buildings. And so it's conspicuous in that way. And then when you get inside, I was just struck by how insanely well executed it captures the depth and diversity of the Black experience. And the majority of the exhibition space is underground. And so visitors, as visitors enter, they literally go down into literal and sort of metaphorical darkness. And the first exhibit is all about slavery, and it begins with the Middle Passage. And then as you work your way up, you come through exhibits that are focused on segregation, the Jim Crow era, and then you work your way up through Reconstruction. And then when you emerge above ground, it's all about celebration. And so here you are in the light of this vast museum, and you're seeing displays focused on the sort of celebration of black contributions to American culture, music, dance, literature. Michael Jackson's clothes from one of his concerts is positioned next to that of Prince. You see Harriet Tubman's shawl. There's Nat Turner's Bible. Nat Turner, of course, is the slave who led the bloodiest slave revolt in American history. And, you know, museum curators, they were saying, they collected 40,000 artifacts, but less than 10% of it is actually on display. I mean, there's only so much they could put in the building, and all the rest of it is in warehouses. So it's set to open on September 24th. President Obama will cut the ribbon. This museum is 100 years in the making. It started out at the request of black Civil War soldiers who wanted a way to honor their contribution. And it wasn't until the early 2000s that President Bush signed a legislation to make it come into fruition. And then Lonnie Bunch, the director of the museum, had to raise half of the $600 million that went into it. And so now here we are, President Obama, the first black president, will cut the ribbon, opening this museum to the public on September 24th.
Jeff Bennett, always good to talk with you. Thank you so much for joining us.
Sure thing. Take care.
Jeff Bennett, senior Washington reporter for Time Warner Cable News. You can find links to more of Jeff's reporting at our website, stateofthings.org. Just ahead, author Ron Rash joins us to talk about his new novel, The Risen. Stay with us on The State of Things from North Carolina Public Radio, a broadcast service of the University of North Carolina, Chapel Hill.